You know that feeling, right? That moment you decide, okay, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna build a house
Yeah.
or, finally tackle that big renovation.
It's pure dopamine.
It is. You're just picturing the floor-to-ceiling glass, the huge kitchen island, the way the light comes in the morning.
It's a beautiful phase. We call it the Pinterest phase.
Exactly. But then, almost immediately, comes the waking nightmare.
The spreadsheet.
The spreadsheet of doom. You take that beautiful vision, you put it next to your bank account, and you realize your champagne taste is colliding violently with your domestic beer budget.
And that collision is where, 99% of projects just stall.
Right.
And it's exactly where we are starting today. We're not just talking about, how to save a few pennies on tiles. We are doing a deep dive into a really provocative piece from Wolf
The
Architects.
one called The Architecture of Value, Beyond Cheap and Affordable.
That's the one.
And I have to say, this is not your standard top 10 tips listicle. It
It
feels more like a philosophical intervention.
is. It challenges the whole way we even search for professionals. It's tackling affordability versus value head on.
And with interest rates up, cost of living, everything, people are tightening their
Of
belts.
course, everyone's looking for a bargain.
It's just human nature.
It is. But the core argument we're exploring today is that searching for a bargain in architecture is a trap, a really dangerous one.
So that's our mission today. We're going to unpack this. We'll look at why cheap is actually scary, why affordable is often just a mask for something worse.
And how to find true value, which, spoiler alert, involves something the source calls getting the bones right.
Okay, so let's start with definitions, because the source draws a very, very hard line on the word cheap.
It's brutal.
It is. I usually think of cheap as just, a good deal. But this article says if something's cheap, by definition, it costs below average. And if it costs below average,
There's zero expectation of quality.
that feels a little harsh. I mean, if I buy a cheap t-shirt, I know it might shrink, but I don't feel like I've been scammed.
Sure, but a t-shirt isn't a house. The source argues that in architecture, cheap implies nasty and temporary.
Nasty and temporary.
Think about it. A cheap gadget, you expect it to break. A cheap shirt, the stitching goes. But when you apply that mindset to a building,
Yeah, okay. A shirt falling apart is annoying.
yeah.
A house falling apart is a catastrophe. The article used that analogy, the Band-Aid solution.
Exactly. When someone looks for a cheap architect or a cheap builder, what they're really asking for is a temporary fix. But a building isn't a cut on your finger.
So it's the wrong tool for the job.
Completely. And the source takes a strong moral stance on this. It says looking for cheap is almost like trying to trick the system.
Tricking the system.
Wow. Because you're trying to get a result that the budget just doesn't justify. You want permanent, high-quality shelter, but you're paying for temporary, low-quality input.
And the article says nothing good can come from that.
Nothing. And the fallout isn't just your wallet, it's environmental waste.
The landfill argument.
Exactly. If you build something nasty and poor, where does it end up in 15, 20 years?
That's it.
It gets demolished. So the argument is that building cheap is actually an act of environmental damage. You are creating future trash.
Wow. That is a heavy way to look at it, but
Right.
makes sense. A house is a massive pile of concrete and steel to just throw away.
Right.
But let's be real. Most people aren't walking into a firm saying, "Hi, I'd like one nasty, cheap house, please." They use a different word
Oh, yes.
to say, "I want something affordable."
Affordable, the magic word. It sounds so responsible, doesn't it?
It does.
But our source warns that affordable has become a euphemism. It's a mask.
So who's wearing the mask?
The source points to two main groups. First, you have the developers.
Villains, this story.
Well, in this context, yeah, often. Developers use affordable to market their projects. Affordable living, you've seen it.
Affordable luxury, yeah.
But what they often mean is just cheap. They need to maximize their profit, so affordable is used to disguise a product built with the absolute minimum viable quality.
Okay, that's the seller side. What about the buyers?
Group two is kind of the tragic figure here. It's the hopeful client, the family with a limited budget who is daring to dream.
They're not trying to rip anyone off.
No, not at all. They just want a home. But they fall into this trap of wishful thinking.
And this is where it gets really interesting for me. The source talks about the risks these dreamers take. They see a quote that looks affordable, but what are they actually buying?
Well, often they're hiring inexperienced architects or draftspeople, or and this is a specific call-out draftspeople masquerading as architects.
I do want to push back on this for a second, though. I mean, everyone has to start somewhere, right? If I hire a young architect, fresh out of school, sure, they're cheap, but maybe they're hungry. Maybe they're a genius. Is that really a trap?
It's a massive gamble. And the source points out this predatory dynamic in the market. You have these talented young architects desperate to get a foot in the door.
I can see that.
Yeah.
You want to build a portfolio, prove yourself.
Exactly. And developers or bargain hunting clients see that. They promise regular work exposure if the fees stay low. But those low fees become a trap. Real architecture takes time. It takes resources to check engineering, to detail waterproofing, to think properly about light. If the young architect is getting paid peanuts, they literally cannot afford to spend that time.
So they're forced to cut corners just to stay afloat.
Precisely. They get stuck doing cheap work, never having the resources to deliver quality, and it stifles their entire career. And the client, who thought they were getting an affordable genius, ends up with a home designed by someone who is overworked, underpaid, and just rushing.
So if cheap is nasty and affordable is a trap, what are we supposed to look for?
We look for value.
Okay, let's unpack that, because value is one of those buzzwords that gets thrown around so much. What does it actually mean here?
Yeah. In this context, value is about transparency. It's about honesty. But most importantly, it's about where you put the money.
And this brings us to getting the bones right.
This is the critical part of the whole deep dive, the bones.
I love this concept. It sounds almost anatomical.
It is. The argument from Wolf Architects is that a home with a great floor plan, great bones, is valuable even if it's unfinished,
yep.
Even if the finishes are cheap.
So you're saying I'm better off with a brilliant layout and, I don't know, plywood floors than a bad layout with marble tiles.
100%. Because you can always upgrade the floors later. You can't easily fix a bad layout. You can't just rotate a house to face the sun once it's built. The source uses a very vivid analogy here. The monster pig.
The monster pig. I was waiting for this. Okay, paint the picture for us.
It's fantastic imagery. So imagine an awkward, ugly house. That's the pig. Bad flow, dark corners, just weird proportions.
Okay.
Now imagine the owner tries to fix it by spending a fortune. Expensive tiles, gold taps, fancy curtains.
Lipstick on a pig.
Exactly. No matter how much money you throw at it, it is still an ugly monster underneath. You are just burning cash.
Got it.
But compare that to a healthy, fit person. That's the house with good bones. Perfect geometry, great light, logical flow. Even if you dress that person in rags, you know, simple concrete floors, basic laminate, they still look stunning.
That is such a clear way to visualize it. If the structure is sound, every dollar you add later actually increases the value. If the structure's bad, you're just throwing money into a black hole.
And it connects to generational thinking. Investing in the design stage, the bones, it pays dividends not just for you, but for the next generation. A well-designed house lasts. A cheap house is landfill.
But this brings up a big question. Why can't I just find a cheap architect to design good bones? Why does it cost so much to just draw a floor plan correctly? A pen costs what, $2?
That is the million-dollar question. And it gets to what the source calls the ingredients myth.
The ingredients myth. Go on.
It's this misconception that if you give two people the same opportunity, you get the same result. The text uses a MasterChef analogy.
Oh, I love a good cooking show analogy.
Right. So imagine you have two people. One is a Michelin star chef. The other is, let's say, an enthusiastic amateur.
Okay.
You put them in the exact same sterile high-end kitchen. You give them the exact same premium ingredients, wagyu beef, truffles, the works, same amount of time. Are they going to produce the same dish?
Absolutely not. The chef creates a masterpiece. The amateur probably burns the truffles.
Exactly. The difference isn't the tools or the ingredients. It's the experience, the skill, the talent. In architecture, people think the software does the work. Oh, you have Revit. The computer draws the house.
But the computer doesn't know where the sun rises.
And the computer doesn't know how a family actually lives. This is where the source pivots to talk about creativity as a differentiator, using Wolf Architects as a case study.
They do. And it's interesting to look at their profile. We're talking about a firm that's been around for 25 years, plus another 15 of prior work. That's a quarter century of institutional memory.
That's huge. Institutional memory means knowing what doesn't work. You're paying to avoid 1,000 mistakes a younger firm might make on your dime.
And it's not just time served. The source mentions they hire staff with broad hobbies: painting, photography, cooking, travel. Why does that matter? Why do I care if my architect likes to paint?
Because architecture isn't just math, it's feeling, it's art. If your architect is just a technician, you get a box. If your architect is a creative, you get a home with a soul.
And the founder, Therese Wolf. His background is wild.
Hmm.
Art, graphic design, and ballroom dancing.
A top professional ballroom dancer for over a decade.
That is fantastic. But again, is that just a fun fact or does it actually impact the house?
Well, think about what dancing is. It's spatial awareness, it's flow, it's rhythm, it's understanding how a body moves through a space without bumping into things.
Ah, I see.
It's creativity in the bones. That unique background gives them an edge in understanding floor plans that a cookie cutter firm just can't replicate. That's the value. It's intangible, but you feel it when you walk into the room.
So let's talk about the price of that expertise. Because eventually you have to sign a check. The source gets into the nitty-gritty of fees, specifically the difference between paying 5% and 10%.
This is a crucial breakdown. So a client might look at a firm like Wolf Architects charging a standard 10% fee, and then they see another firm charging 5%.
And the math seems simple. 5% is half of 10%. I save tens of thousands of dollars. The 5% firm is the better deal, right?
And that's the fast food trap.
Okay, hit me with the fast food analogy.
The source compares that 5% firm to a fast food joint launching a new special. You see the ad, it looks amazing, it's exciting. You go buy it, and it's just the same old unhealthy cheeseburger with maybe a different sauce.
It's a cookie cutter product.
Precisely. A firm charging 5% has to run on volume. To stay in business with fees that low, they have to churn out projects. They can't afford to spend 40 hours tailoring the bones to your specific needs. They give you the cheeseburger.
Where is the 10% firm?
The 10% firm is actually charging what the source argues is a cheap historical rate.
Wait, 10% is cheap. Most people would choke on their coffee hearing that.
Historically, yes. Traditional architects used to charge up to 18% of the construction cost.
So what happened? Why did it drop?
The market fragmented. This is the slice of the pie concept. Decades ago, the architect did everything. Now, everyone wants a slice.
Consultant.
The list is endless. You've got project managers, interior designers, decorators, lighting consultants, acoustic consultants, energy consultants.
And they all send a bill.
They do. So the architect's fee has been diluted down to about 10%. But here's the kicker. Despite getting a smaller slice, the architect is the only professional with a full grasp of the entire building.
They're the conductor of the orchestra.
Exactly. The lighting guy only cares about lights. The acoustic guy only cares about sound. The architect has to make it all work together.
And if you pay them less, that 5% rate, you're not just saving money. You're stripping the conductor of their baton. You're saying, I don't value your oversight.
And when things go wrong, which they always do on a building site, the architect still gets 90% of the blame.
Of course. Why didn't you stop this? Well, you didn't pay me enough to be here.
Exactly. It's a blame game. You're saving money on the fee, but you're likely losing much more on mistakes and poor coordination.
So paying the 10% isn't just for drawings. It's paying for someone to actually take responsibility for the final result.
Correct. It's paying for accountability.
Okay, so we know cheap is bad, affordable is suspicious, and we need value and good bones.
Yeah.
But how do we actually find it? Because if I go to Google right now and type architect, I'm going to get a million results.
And the source has some advice here that is, well, it's counterintuitive.
It's radical. The advice is stop searching for affordable. Instead, you should search for best architects or even most expensive architects.
I know. It sounds like financial suicide. I have a budget problem, so let me find the most expensive option. But follow the logic.
Okay, walk me through it. Why would I do that?
Because expensive often just means high demand or high quality. Yeah. It's a proxy for reputation. And just because a firm is top tier doesn't mean they are totally inaccessible.
So I call up the expensive firm.
Yeah.
And then what? Do I just beg?
You talk to them. You negotiate. Maybe you can't afford their full turnkey service where they pick every cushion. But maybe you can afford a partial service.
Ah, so you go back to the bones.
Exactly. Pay the best firm to design the concept, just the bones, and then you handle the rest yourself or with a cheaper team. You're investing your limited budget in the most high-impact part of the process.
That's actually really smart. It's like hiring a Michelin chef to design the menu, even if the line cooks are just regular guys.
Perfect analogy. And there's an efficiency argument here, too.
The hourly rate math.
Yes. So let's say a top firm like Wolf Architects charges a high hourly rate, say $500 an hour. But because of all that experience, that 25 years plus the ballroom dancing creativity, they might crack the code of your house design in 1 hour.
1 hour of brilliance.
Versus a cheaper firm that charges $100 an hour. But because they're inexperienced or overworked, it takes them 10 hours to produce something mediocre.
So that's $500 for the brilliant solution versus $1,000 for the mediocre one.
Exactly. The expensive firm was actually 50% cheaper in the long run.
And you get a better result.
Paying a high rate for a fast, brilliant solution is much better value than paying a low rate to go nowhere.
It really reframes the whole concept of cost. It's not about the sticker price, it's about the outcome.
Exactly. Expensive is just a word we use when we feel we can't afford something. It doesn't reflect the actual worth.
So we've covered a lot of ground. We've torn apart cheap, exposed the affordable trap, elevated value. But there is one final piece, the build itself.
Yes, contract administration.
This is the phase where the house is actually being built. Now, the source mentions that some firms, Wolf included, ask for an additional fee, maybe 13%, to stick around and oversee construction.
And this is the moment where most clients balk. They think, the drawings are done, the builder knows what to do. Why am I paying you to stand around on site? Is this just an upsell?
It does sound like an upsell. Would you like fries with that house?
But the source says, no, they aren't doing it for the money. They're doing it to preserve the design intent, to ensure the happiness of the final result.
Happiness. That's not a word you usually see in a construction contract.
It isn't, but that's what a home is. It's a machine for happiness. Mm-hmm. And if the architect isn't there to protect the design during the build, that happiness gets chipped away.
Chipped away how?
Compromises. The builder says, hey, this window is hard to get. Let's swap it for this cheaper one. Or let's move this pipe to make it easier for the plumber.
And suddenly that perfect flow you paid for is ruined.
Exactly. Death by a thousand cuts. If the architect isn't there to defend the bones, you end up with a compromised product. You end up with a monster pig again.
So paying that extra fee is basically insurance. Insurance for your own happiness.
That's a great way to put it. It ensures the dream actually survives the reality of construction.
Well, there you have it. The next time you sit down to plan a project, don't just open a spreadsheet and look for the lowest number. Look for the bones. Look for the experience. And maybe, just maybe, dare to Google most expensive architect and see what happens.
You might be surprised.
You might just get the best value of your life. Thanks for listening to this deep dive. Go find some good bones.